Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and no, I didn't really miss talking about how the authoritarian Trump regime is tearing this country apart piece by piece while I was overseas, but I did miss talking with all of you these last couple of weeks, and hey, that's what's got me fired up this week. I am feeling a bit better by the day since returning from the voyage that I had with my family along the Mediterranean coast, and I am starting to sound and feel like myself more and more. But up until getting ill, I did have a great time checking out Rome, Portofino, the French Riviera, and Barcelona. And I noticed people out there are walking. And I noticed people out there are biking all around and eating fresh food. And yes, I was able to find some great alcohol. And I also noticed while in Cannes, or is it Cannes, and Monte Carlo, that we do indeed need to tax the rich. But one other thing, I also didn't see many pickup trucks in those areas as well. Lots of scooters, lots of bikes, lots and lots of electric cars. It's almost as if the rest of the world is moving on while America is stupidly walking backwards into a world that doesn't exist anymore. And it's almost like we're being ruled by those who have zero clue on what the hell is going on. Like, for example, I nearly tossed my phone into the Pine River here in Gratiot County when I read this headline from the Detroit News. Michigan GOP reps demand Canada contain wildfires whose smoke is polluting summer vacations. Excuse me, what? John James, MAGA Republican, Michigan Congressman John James, who's also running for governor, signed onto a letter with other MAGAs in Congress saying, Michigan has had three straight summers of smoke and pollution from Canadian wildfires. That's not right. I sent a letter to the Canadian Prime Minister urging action. It's time to work together to protect our people, our shared border, and our air. You know the amazing part about this is how John James and other Michigan Republicans are freaking clueless of how their policies backed by billionaire fossil fuel donors are one of the main reasons why we are experiencing hazy and smoke-filled skies. Now, I will provide links to a great write-up by Peter Sinclair, good friend of the podcast, and where he gives multiple examples of how former MAGA Michigan Republican Congresswoman Candace Miller helped push an anti-climate change, pro-fossil fuel agenda with all of her votes in Congress. And now here she is today complaining about Canadian wildfire smoke as she's now the current Macomb County Public Works Commissioner. I mean, cognitive dissonance, again, is a major, major feature on being a MAGA Republican. And if you visit Mr. Sinclair's blog called This Is Not Cool, he posted Candace Miller's voting record in his article that's titled Republican Karen Notices Climate Catastrophe Demands to See Manager. And in it, he reminds us that Miller had an 11% lifetime rating from the League of Conservation Voters. She voted against limiting carbon dioxide pollution while voting yes for more oil refineries. Candace Miller also backed bills to block the EPA from regulating emission standards. And she backed moves to block greenhouse gases from being part of the Clean Air Act. So please check out that article from Peter Sinclair. I will provide a link to it wherever you're listening to this podcast. And to piggyback off of that, Republicans just passed the MAGA murder budget, which is throwing away this country's major investments in wind, solar, and other clean energy technologies, which of course is costing jobs and hurting working class families who rely on those jobs. Oh, and let's not forget how Deer Leader's Environmental Protection Agency is currently forcing a coal-fired power plant called the J.H. Campbell plant to continue operating, even though it was due to shut down at the end of May, and it is costing so far just to keep that plant open $30 million extra. But yes, Let's all have some form of performative outrage at Canada for wildfires, which are becoming more and more commonplace thanks to climate change. I was just in Europe, and they are dealing with record heat over there this summer. They're not equipped to handle record heat, but it's happening because of climate change. We are experiencing 100-year storms on a yearly basis now, but thanks to Dear Leader and MAGA Republicans, we're doubling down on fossil fuels because the Defense Department regrets to inform you that we're dying because your sons were stupid. Dear Leader Trump's Environmental Protection Agency is working on forcing the government to gut its protections against car and truck emissions. What? I mean, that's something scientists have long concluded has led to climate change. But Dear Leader, who just walked aimlessly on the roof of the White House looking like Chauncey Gardner and being there, hey, he knows better, apparently. You have to trust Dear Leader over the scientists. How's that make you feel? Now, at least I believe his EPA head, Lee Zeldin, who made millions in the fossil fuel industry, he does know better. But what is worse is that he doesn't care. All right. He knows better, but he doesn't care because he wants the government to keep funneling money to their fossil fuel bosses. And they're doing that while ripping money away from the working class safety net. That's what they're doing in order to help pay off their fossil fuel bosses. Dear Leader and Lee Zeldin are trying to get rid of the endangerment finding. All right. Which is a crucial step in tailpipe emission standards. But gutting that step, everyone, gutting that step will, of course, save automakers lots of money. Money, of course, that the workers will never, ever see. Yet, even worse, though, I think, is that automakers really didn't ask for this because, well, they're already moving on to more fuel-efficient cars and trucks and also moving on towards EV cars. And don't forget how in the MAGA murder budget, every Michigan Republican voted to gut the EV car tax credit. And they also voted to end tax credits to install home EV charging stations. By the way, Rick Haglund wrote more about how the Trump regime's EPA is gutting crucial protections against climate change in a recent column in Michigan Advance. And Rick will be my guest in a couple of moments, so stand by for that. We'll talk about some things here in Michigan. And I want to talk to him about Dear Leader's recent firing of the Bureau of Labor Statistics director because of a poor jobs report. Authoritarianism is already here, everyone. leftoflansing@gmail.com is the best way to reach me. Please subscribe to the show on YouTube. Subscribe wherever you are listening. And please give the show a generous 4 or 5 star review. Coming up after my talk with Michigan Advance's Rick Haglund, I'll give my last call segment in which I talk a little bit about how some Lansing political reporters and consultants are so giddy and they are pushing a false narrative that current Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan is running a centrist campaign to become Michigan's next governor. However, Mike Duggan is getting strong backing from many extreme MAGA Republican supporters and donors. And that just shows you what Lansing insiders believe constitutes the so-called centrist plank. And that leads to this week's Twitter poll question. Would you support Mike Duggan as Michigan's next governor? Yes or no. You can also leave your comments on my social media. That's again, Blue Sky, Facebook, Twitter, or the Gram. And that's also through my email, leftoflansing@gmail.com, if you'd like to expound a little bit more on this week's poll question. Again, would you support Mike Duggan as Michigan's next governor? Yes or no. With Duggan leaving Detroit, finally, that means we will have a new Detroit mayor, and we got one step closer to figuring out who that could be. Detroit City Council President Mary Sheffield won the primary by garnering over 50% of the vote. Sheffield could become Detroit's first woman to become mayor, not to mention that at the age of 38, Sheffield could become a millennial leader in Detroit. Not a bad change there. Pastor Solomon Kinloch finished in a distant second place with 20% of the vote. So it'll be Sheffield against Kinloch this November. And I just have to say this real quick, if you don't mind. It was just so sad to see that former Detroit Sheriff James Craig ended up in fifth place. Oh, I really had high hopes for him. Okay, not really. But I think he'll be fine. He'll find some time to appear on Fox News again. I'm sure of it. And then there was this little interesting race happening in Detroit's 7th District for the city council where Democratic Socialist Denzel Anton McCampbell eked out a narrow victory against Democratic State Representative Karen Whitsett. Now, Whitsett is somebody I've talked about here a few times on the show, if you recall, because she sided with MAGA Republicans last year in the state house to block certain bills from reaching the house floor. She also voted to prevent women on Medicaid from receiving abortion care in the state. She is a despicable and horrible, horrible human being. And it's sad. It really is sad that it was such a close race, but at the same time, it's inspiring that just enough voters in that district voted for McCampbell instead. However, this was just a primary, and both will have to face each other again in the general election this November. And trust me, Ms. Whitsett will get some heavy money thrown her way by big money right-wing MAGA forces. So this is long, long, long from being over. And I just wanted to say one quick word about our good progressive friend and fighter, Democratic State Representative Betsy Cafia in Traverse City, who introduced a bill, not only a common sense kind of a bill, but a pro-American, pro-Constitution kind of a bill, only to have that bill shut down by little MAGA man baby House Speaker Matt Hall. Representative Cafia's bill was called the Justice Needs No Mask Bill. And it would have required all law enforcement officials to wear clear identification while also banning the use of masks. And that's something that we've seen too much here in Michigan and across the nation as Dear Leader's Gestapo thugs are ripping away hardworking undocumented workers and making them disappear. It not only rips families apart, but it's ripping our economy apart. Betsy Cafia told Michigan Advance that while some of her Republican colleagues aren't real enthusiastic about all those masked ICE agents terrorizing their local neighborhoods, she said there was still no chance they'd ever back her proposal. And Matt Hall ended all speculation by essentially sending the bill to a committee where bills all languish to die. Now, Hall complained about how Betsy Cafia's bill was an attack on law enforcement, which is really, really funny considering how Matt Hall and his fellow Republicans have refused to produce a state budget that's long overdue and that is hurting police across the state. And it's also really funny considering how Matt Hall and many of his MAGA Michigan Republican colleagues there in the state house were all about trying to steal the 2020 election and who were all so happy when Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol building while attacking police officers. But even more than that, it shows that Matt Hall and Michigan Republicans are happy to see their state get terrorized by masked ICE thugs, and they're happy to see powerless people, many of whom are going through the steps of becoming a citizen and are working hard in a system that they won't receive any benefits. Matt Hall and the MAGA Republicans here in Michigan are getting off on seeing people and families getting kidnapped through sheer fear. And it says a lot because while Michigan's economy is sluggish with an unemployment rate that's above the national average, we have people here who are working hard and paying into the system. And yet, Matt Hall and the Michigan MAGA Republicans would rather revel in their glee of watching brown people get terrorized on a daily basis rather than rewarding them for helping Michigan become a stronger and more vibrant state. Cruelty is the point, because logically, this makes zero sense. Making zero sense logically. Well, that's pretty much par for the course when it comes to MAGA Republicanism. Michigan Advance's Rick Haglund is coming up. You're listening to LOL.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Yeah, I know with me being overseas recently that I haven't been able to post any YouTube shorts here lately. And since I've returned, I've been trying to get myself better and healthy. And on top of that, our dog decided to give us a little health issue of her own that we're now dealing with. So, of course, she said, wait, you guys can't be the only ones sick. I want to join you. So once things start to settle down again and once my family starts feeling healthy again, I'll get on those videos as soon as possible. Please, though, subscribe to the show on YouTube because you'll not only get some content that you're not getting from just listening to the podcast, but you'll get to see me too. All right. Well, I'm not sure that's really much of a selling point, but what I have to say, hey, maybe that might be a selling point. So subscriptions are important to us, and it would mean a lot if you could subscribe and help spread the word about Left of Lansing throughout Michigan and the country. All right. I've been talking and writing about the state of the economy in both Michigan and the Nation of Light, and I thought, you know, instead of just hearing from me, maybe you guys would like to hear from someone who's actually an expert when it comes to economic matters and someone who really knows what they're talking about when it comes to the economy. And I could think of none other than Rick Haglund to come back here on the show. Rick is the Mich economist for the Michigan political news publication known as Michigan Advance, my favorite publication. And we are grateful that Rick's able to spend a little time here talking with us here this week. So, Rick, thanks for being able to carve out some time to appear on Left of Lansing. How are you doing?
Good to be with you.
Well, listen, just to get started, I have to ask you about Trump's latest move last week to fire the director of Bureau of Labor Statistics after the BLS released its jobs report for July showing some sluggish jobs numbers, but it also made a downward revision of its numbers for the months of May and June by some 285,000. Now, I said on here that I wasn't shocked that Trump ended up firing the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics because, well, that's just his MO throughout his entire career, even before politics. But can you talk about how a move like this will lead to, you know, maybe some greater distrust in whatever jobs numbers are released in the future? And also, maybe you can explain why those numbers change so drastically, but why that's maybe not also uncommon.
I think what's the danger here is that it's going to cast a lot of doubt on the accuracy of the numbers in the future. You know, as you said, what really seemed to torque the president was this downward revision in May and June, which essentially there was found that there was no job growth at all in those 2 months. And my understanding, I mean, I'm not an expert on how all these numbers are put together. The New York Times had a really interesting podcast yesterday about it. But essentially, I think what happens is, you know, these revisions are not uncommon. This one was quite a bit higher than normal. But my understanding is that the folks at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, you know, are constantly updating information. The initial numbers are an estimate. And as time goes on, they get more information about what happened in previous months and then did the revision. But once again, I mean, this seems to be a thing that Trump is basically trying to erode trust in all sorts of institutions. And it's really kind of dangerous for the economy and how we put things together, say, well, cast doubt on the accuracy of the numbers and suggest that it's politically motivated to hurt Trump, which there's no evidence of that at all. So it's really a danger point going forward because all sorts of people use these numbers to plan. Businesses use them. Economists use them. If there's no trust in those numbers, it's really bad for the economy.
And again, I mean, the Bureau of Labor Statistics made a similar revision months before the election last year, saying that it overestimated the number of jobs then. So, like you said, this isn't unprecedented. This is kind of normal activity.
It is. And Trump has made a bunch of misstatements about the revisions in the past, saying that just, you know, revising them just before the election to help Kamala Harris. And that, you know, that turned out not to be true. It's not a very good omen.
From the information that you get and the numbers that you read, were you surprised when you saw those revisions, you yourself, or did you expect to see a sluggish job market under the current economic conditions and policies that we've been seeing?
Maybe I was a little surprised at the extent of the revision, but I mean, there's been a lot of news about companies, you know, they're uncertain about what's happening with the tariffs. They can't plan. They're not hiring. There's been a lot of big layoffs in the tech sector. So there was a lot of underlying weakness that really got exposed by these numbers.
That's what I was wondering too, because I've been seeing some others saying the exact same thing. You know, I've always heard it said that presidents can have, you know, minimal impacts on the day-to-day aspects on the economy. Sure, I mean, they can spur economic policies that might change some long-term factors, you know, maybe through a major bill like the one that was just passed here last month. But usually, though, nothing can really change in the short term. But is Trump showing everyone how a president can have immediate impacts? Let's say in terms of tariffs, are we seeing that a president does have some control and does have some kind of power on the short-term economy that maybe we didn't see before?
It's possible. I mean, he's obviously changed really how we raise money to finance the government through these tariffs. I mean, this is a major change from the way we've always done things. You know, we haven't seen tariffs like this since President McKinley 100 years ago or so. And
right.
McKinley's been sort of a model for Trump. I think overall, I mean, he has changed things in the short term just through all the chaos of the things that he's been doing. We've got a pretty strong, resilient economy, and it's really been, in my mind, been put in danger by the tariffs and the firing the BLS commissioner and harassing the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates when inflation is still a bit of a problem. So he has had a short-term effect, but I don't think it's been very good.
Right. Well, and thanks for bringing that up about his pressuring of the Fed to lower interest rates. Am I off base? I've said this on the show, and so I want to make sure, you know, maybe I want to make sure I'm saying the right thing here. If you're advocating for a drop in interest rates, but saying that the economy is the strongest economy ever, those two things are completely different, right? Because if the economy is doing well, then interest rates would naturally rise then, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's you know, there's a bit of a dichotomy there. But one of the things that he may have had is maybe a small victory in his effort to get interest rates to be lowered because of these revisions in the employment numbers, that despite him saying, well, this is, you know, the strongest economy we've ever seen, those numbers are showing some weakness and may prompt the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates later this year if that continues.
Yeah, that's kind of what it looks like. You know, Rick, another place where Trump and Republicans are playing a role in Michigan's economy and the nation's economy, of course, is either by clamping down or eliminating clean energy jobs, rather through executive orders or through the executive branch or through bills like the budget bill that he just signed into law on July 1st. And of course, many reports, as you've also noted as well, are saying that this is really going to hurt the growing clean energy sector. For example, in that so-called bill, the tax credits for investments on solar and wind and EVs, I think those will start to phase out this year. But for some reason, similar tax credits for EV batteries don't get phased out until 2034, I think. Anyway, this whole thing is part of gutting some of the progress that we've made in clean energy investments. And you wrote more about it in your latest article in Michigan Advance titled, "The EPA Wants to Ditch Climate Change Rules. That's Bad for Humans and Automakers." Could you please just talk about how Trump's EPA is rolling back climate change standards and what that could mean for Michigan's economic and also environmental futures.
Well, what happened last week, the EPA came out and said that they intend to reduce what's called the endangerment finding from the days of the Obama administration, which basically said kind of underpins all of the endangerment finding kind of underpins all of the ability of the EPA to regulate greenhouse gases. And the finding came about in 2009 when the Obama administration determined that greenhouse gases were a threat to public health, and they therefore could be regulated by the EPA under the Clean Air Act. Well, what the new EPA director, Lee Zeldin, did was he commissioned a study by five scientists who were climate skeptics, and they came out and said, no, there's no connection between greenhouse gases and climate change. And so we intend to do away with that finding. It's going to be a while. There's a lengthy process that involves public comment, and then they have to establish rules, and there's inevitably is going to be litigation to challenge this. So it's going to be a while before it takes effect, but it kind of puts the automakers, they're being sort of pulled in both directions. On one hand, I mean, they really like less regulation, but they have also sunk billions of dollars into electric vehicles. And I think they believe that even though the electric vehicle market is certainly hasn't taken off like it was expected to, that electric vehicles are the future. So they have to keep investing in those. So on one hand, they've got an incentive to keep building internal combustion engine vehicles. But on the other hand, from a survival standpoint, long term, they have to develop electric vehicles. It's a difficult thing, I think, for them. kind of makes it more difficult for them to plan, and it really kind of disrupts their whole profitable operations.
And you put in there on how that budget bill has language in which it says that automakers won't have to pay fines for not meeting fuel efficiency standards for the last 3 years. I guess that's one aspect that they really liked from the bill.
Yes, it is. I mean, the federal government regulates autos in two ways. They regulate the tailpipe emissions, and then they regulate the fuel efficiency of vehicles. And those fuel efficiency regulations have become more stringent over the years, and most of the automakers don't meet them, and they either have to pay fines to the federal government or they have to buy credits from Tesla that can sell regulatory credits to them that kind of offsets the penalties for not meeting the emissions requirements. So it's that part is kind of a good thing for them. I mean,
For them.
it's sort of a, multi-billion dollar gift to them, but on the other hand, they know that they really want regulations. They want regulations that are reasonable to them, and they don't want just to return to the kind of Wild West where they can do whatever they want. They know the hazards of climate change, and they've come out and basically said, "Yeah, I mean, it's real, and our products are contributing to them, and we need to deal with that."
Well, and I think that's why you also wrote about how these moves are leaving automakers somewhat miffed and confused right now as well. The marketplace, especially worldwide marketplace, it's already moving in this trend. So on an economic level, I understand why some people, and I guess including automakers, would be saying, what are we doing here?
Well, and the thing is, as I said before, I mean, the future really is electric vehicles. China is dominating that space, and Ford CEO Jim Farley has come out pretty strongly as saying that we've got to compete with these companies or we're going to be out of business. There was a Ford official, I think it was the CFO, but I'm not sure, basically came out and said Chinese vehicles are going to come to the United States at some point. Most of them are going to be EVs. Protectionism can only last so long, and if we're not ready, we're not going to survive. So they know they have to do this.
No, that's right. But even more, I mean, this doesn't just deal with automakers and with the auto industry. Since Michigan has been spending time trying to diversify its economic portfolio through clean energy jobs, these rollbacks of clean energy investments, especially from the budget bill that was passed, I mean, that is going to hurt Michigan pretty immediately too, because we do have a growing clean energy sector here. It is creating thousands of jobs. But if a lot of these contracts and a lot of these tax credits are going to disappear, that is going to hurt Michigan on an economic level. Not to mention, of course, with our when it comes to our electrical grid, which I guess is also economic when it comes to how we get our electricity and the rates that we pay. So in all, this is going to hurt Michigan in a multitude of ways. At least that's what it looks like.
And somewhat tangential to this is, as you probably know, there was a big computer chips plant that was proposed for the Flint area, and the company, it was going to create thousands of jobs, and the company backed away from that a couple of weeks ago. Basically, it appears to be because of the uncertainty of Trump policies towards that industry as well. And chips are connected to cars and all that sort of thing. There's an immediate impact.
Wow. Well, as usual, Rick, there's so much that I would like to ask you with our limited time. But while I have you here, I have to get your take on what some Republicans in the state house are proposing, which is to cut the state income tax altogether. Now, of course, many Republicans are trying to cut the state income tax from 4.25 to 4.05%, which would be devastating at this time, thanks to that MAGA Republican bill that was passed in Congress that we just talked about. Michigan will now experience, thanks to that bill, $1 billion+ hole in the state budget this year, $1.1 billion shortfall. Now, I think eliminating the state income tax is the goal for many Michigan Republicans, and that will have massive upon massive repercussions for Michigan. But gutting the state income tax, Rick, is that on your radar on what Michigan Republicans ultimately want to achieve in the near future? I mean, that they see this eventually to be their end goal?
Yes, but I think let's just speculate that the Republicans take control of state government after the 2026 election. I suspect if that were to happen, I think you'll see probably an income tax rate cut. I think This thing about just totally eliminating the income tax is kind of a lot of political rhetoric that designed to capture votes from people who say, oh, yeah, that sounds good to me. They don't have to pay income tax anymore. They've talked about doing that, but nobody has basically said how they're going to replace that income. Some of them, Mike Cox has been at the forefront of this, the former attorney general who's running for governor. He's basically saying, get rid of the income. He's kind of rebranded it as the tax on work and saying, let's get rid of that. We can afford to do that by cutting state government. Well, the income tax provides the vast majority of revenues for the entire general fund to run government. So it's pretty inconceivable that could happen without some kind of replacement revenue.
That's why I was wondering, is this all for show or is this something that they would eventually like to do? But like you said, if Republicans take control of the trifecta, you would expect though for them to some way make a cut to the state's income tax.
Yeah, I mean, they could lower the rate. They've been talking about that for a while.
And then what?
Well, it depends on how far they would lower the rate, but I would think there probably have to be some cuts to state government to support that. The longtime Republican philosophy is that, well, you cut taxes and that creates new economic growth and it pays for the tax cuts and more, turbocharges economic growth. Well, it's been kind of proven time and time again that that just is kind of nonsense. It just doesn't happen that way.
Finally, here, Rick, my last question has to deal with populism and populist economic policies, because it seems like to many out there that populism is winning, like in New York City with Zohran Mamdani winning the Democratic primary there to become the next mayor of New York, and with how the economy is faltering, as we've already talked about here at the beginning today, how the economy is faltering for working class Americans. Is populism winning? I mean, is it winning on the left side? It's already been winning a little bit on the right side. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like any of the solutions on the right side of populism helps the working class whatsoever. But still, is populism winning? And is populism winning? And are many people in the economic sphere realizing that populism is quite, well, for lack of a better word, popular right now?
Well, I'm no political analyst, but yeah, I think you can see some of that. I think part of the story is that centrism is kind of dead at the moment, and that both parties are saying, kind of each going in the extreme in their own way, as you say, right-wing populism, left-wing populism. So yeah, I think that's happening. But if in terms of right-wing populism that Trump has really exemplified, you look at the polls, and a lot of people are who were previously supporting him have been kind of disenchanted by his performance. His approval ratings have gone down. If this kind of the new way that he's kind of just changed everything about government and economic philosophy, if that works, then populism may be around for a while. But if it doesn't, I think you could see some pullbacks pretty quickly.
Or is it possible that maybe why some are leaving him is because they heard him speak a populist message and then they're saying, wait a second, there's not much populism with the policies that he is pushing?
Well, that's fair. And some of those populism policies are starting to hurt, or maybe hurting some of the people that pushed for that and that attracted them to Trump. And we may see more of that. I mean, like the big Medicaid cuts really don't take effect till the end of next year. So, we don't know what the impact of that is going to be on his support. But what I'm reading is that, a lot of the people who are going to be affected by those cuts are living in red states, are big Trump supporters. And, if they lose those benefits, that really could erode his support.
Well, listen, I've taken too much of your time. So, Rick Haglund, Michigan economist for the Michigan political news publication called Michigan Advance. Look, thank you so much for spending your time and sharing some of your knowledge and expertise on these issues. And it's always great having you on, and I'd love to have you back again in the future.
Sounds great. Thanks.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast. Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's rock and rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
Thanks again to our good friend Rick Haglund, Michigan economist for Michigan Advance, my favorite Michigan political news outlet featuring some keen progressive insights as well. I will provide some of Rick's articles that we highlighted during the interview, and I'll also link to Rick's page on Michigan Advance, so that way you can go back and read all of his many awesome articles and all of his takes when it comes to the economy. Rick does a really fine job over there at Michigan Advance. Time now for this week's Left of Lansing Last Call. And yes, it's going to be a little longer than normal this time because I've lots to say about this one. I came across an article from Andrea Bitely in the Detroit Free Press this week titled, "In Lansing, Political Posturing Has Replaced Governing. Voters Are Sick of It." Now, this is not an attack on Ms. Bitely, who is probably a very nice person. I've never met her. But I am going to attack her article because it's arguing something that doesn't exist. What is that you're asking? Well, Ms. Bitely writes about her frustration over how the state legislature hasn't been able to pass any of the budget bills that are overdue. And she spends her time blaming, of course, both sides when it's not a both sides issue, at least not in terms of the budget. However, Ms. Bitely believes that due to the failures of getting this budget done, not that this is another example of how right-wing MAGA Republican incompetence and radicalism leads to a failing government. No, Ms. Bitely believes that because this is a both sides issue, this will lead to Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan's victory to become the state's next governor next year. And it'll happen because he's running as an independent, so-called. And Ms. Bitely concludes her write-up by saying, and I'm quoting here, "If our leaders don't abandon the circus performance and start doing the work that they were sent there to do, voters will find someone else who will. Maybe that's an independent. Maybe it's someone from a fractured party who can still speak to the middle." Well, well, well. To quote C-3PO, here we go again. Here's another Lansing insider clamoring for the days of when so-called bipartisanship reigned supreme, when moving to this mythical middle solved all of our problems. Look, we had 8 years of Republican rule during the Rick Snyder years, and where did that get the state of Michigan? And we had 2 years of MAGA Republicans in control of the state legislature with Democrat Gretchen Whitmer in office. Where did that get us? Oh, Andrea, we got that kick-ass auto insurance reform bill that, you know, left thousands with less coverage from car accident injuries. And as for costs, Michigan still remains one of the more expensive states in the nation for car insurance. Was that the kind of bipartisanship? That's the kind of move to the middle that we are all clamoring for? Is it really? I love this quote from Michigan Public Radio back in 2023, and it said, I'm quoting here, Doug Heller, director of insurance for the Consumer Federation of America, said that the so-called reform law offered phantom savings by requiring insurance companies to reduce the cost for personal injury protection, but not other parts of your policy. It was a failure. This is an example of when both sides of the aisle, which then included then MAGA Republican House Speaker Lee Chatfield, who's now along with his wife, due to stand trial for misusing thousands of dollars raised through a political action committee. And those charges say that the Chatfields knowingly used that money to pay for lavish vacations, dinners, and other luxurious items. Yes, people of character, or so I used to be told by the Lansing intelligentsia back in the day. But you got to see everybody work together for a crap bill. And of course, let's not forget how that auto insurance reform bill was a huge giveaway, a huge gift with a bow to the insurance industry and the insurance lobby. But this is the kind of stuff that Andrea Bitely and her flock yearn for. And I know that to be true because in the article, she complains how only 6 bills have passed this legislature. But at the same time, she is thankful, and that's the word she used, thankful, Now, one of those bills that did pass was the one that cut the scheduled minimum wage and paid sick time leave in half. Because above anything else, it's all about tamping down the gains for the working class. You can never allow the working class to get ahead. You can only focus on the lobbyists. And as our good friends at Distill Social adroitly noted last week, Las Vegas is running short on tourists thanks to Dear Leader and the MAGA Republican Party's economy. But let that be a lesson on how those relying strictly on tips are surviving on the whims of their customers, and worse, on the realities of this unstable economy. Providing workers with a stable wage and with paid sick time leave is kind of a no-brainer. But again, that's another example, a shining example of bipartisanship that Andrea Bitely is trying to ensure we get again. You see, the problem, though, is that Bitely thinks because Democrats are polling somewhere in the 20 percentile, that means people want them to break bread with a political party that's destroying the very democratic fabric and the economy here in the country. And it's such a wrong way of reading the numbers. Now, I'm no highly paid consultant, but I think it's plain for everyone to see that the reason Democrats are polling in the 20 percentile is because Democratic voters are tired of watching their party leadership follow a loser blueprint where they get smacked around over and over again by MAGA Republicans. They want someone to fight for them. They want someone to fight for the working class. They want somebody to fight against fascism. Independent voters also want the same things. They want to know that someone will stand up for the working class. Andrea Bitely believes that since there's no budget, and since Lansing is broken with lobbyists running the show, that voters will throw their support to Mike Duggan? Will they? Now, he's going to try to portray himself above the fray, you see, and he's going to try to portray himself as a Rick Snyder, a nerd 2.0. But as the Detroit Metro Times' Steve Kneeling revealed last week, Duggan's major donors tend to be the same people who rally for MAGA Republicans and Trump. According to Mr. Kneeling's story, and I quote, "Those who've given to Mike Duggan thus far are a billionaire mega donor to Trump, a charter school profiteer, former leaders of the Michigan Republican Party, and an aide to former Governor Rick Snyder, who was charged for his role in the Flint water crisis. Many of the influential Republicans gave Duggan's campaign the maximum donation allowed, but some of their family members and employees also donated the maximum." Chris Long, a grassroots vice chair of the Michigan Republican Party, warned earlier this month that Duggan's ties to GOP power brokers could harm the party. He suggested conservative donors are more worried about access to Duggan, in case, you know, he wins. And Steve Kneeling continues here writing, "One of Duggan's top backers is Roger Penske, who donated $1.1 million to Make America Great Again Incorporated, a super PAC that supports Trump in the past 2 years. He also personally contributed $5,600 to Trump's 2020 campaign. Duggan also received the maximum donation from J.C. Huizenga, chair of the Huizenga Group and founder of National Heritage Academies, a for-profit charter school chain that has drawn scrutiny for exploiting public education dollars. A Detroit Free Press investigation in 2014 found that Huizenga's company owned most of the buildings its schools occupied, profiting from public funds while avoiding oversight. Over the past 30 years, Huizenga has donated nearly $4 million to Republican candidates and causes, and he stands to benefit directly from state education policies supported by the next governor." Oh, wait, there's more from Steve Kneeling. Ron Weiser, the former chair of the Michigan Republican Party and a major Trump fundraiser, also gave Duggan the maximum donation. His son Mark and daughter-in-law Mary each donated over $8,300 as well. Weiser also helped bankroll Trump's presidential campaigns and has long been a leader in GOP politics, of course. And Duggan also received the maximum donation from Jeff Sakwa, I think that's how you say his name, a former state party co-chair and close ally of Ronna Romney McDaniel, who ran the Republican National Committee and was a zealous Trump supporter. Sakwa openly touted Duggan's support among Republicans, saying recently, "There's a ton of Republicans behind him." Duggan also received $5,500 from Richard Baird, a top aide to former Republican Rick Snyder, and a ringleader in appointing an emergency manager in Detroit. Baird was charged in 2021 with felony extortion and perjury in connection to the Flint water crisis and has faced up to 20 years in prison, but of course, the charges were later dismissed following a Michigan Supreme Court ruling. Snyder's former chief of staff during the Flint water crisis, Dennis Muchmore, donated $850. Hey, everyone, isn't that just awesome? Mike Duncan's got the support of the We Poison Flint's Water wing of the Michigan political elite. It's a fine and exclusive group to belong to, I guess, considering how nobody did time for poisoning their own citizens. They just continue to walk between the raindrops. The state's education system is a mess thanks to the same people, but Andrea Blightley says these are the people, these are the grown-ups that Michiganders must turn to because they represent this mythical middle? Mike Duggan's more than thrilled to derail a Democratic nominee for governor next year just so the corporate class keeps doing business as usual in Lansing. Mike Duggan is for business as usual. Oh, and those lobbyists, they are kissing his butt, and they'll gladly back Mike Duggan because they view him, again, as nerd 2.0. And as a quick aside, perhaps Democratic candidates such as Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson or Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist, maybe they should make it a point to propose anti-corruption ideas in Lansing while at the same time fighting for the working class by proposing popular progressive populist policies. If coveting this mythical middle is such a winning cause, how come voting numbers are drastically down in the city of Detroit, just as we saw in this mayoral primary this week? The Detroit Free Press did a story last week detailing why so many Detroiters sit out local elections, because no one is talking to them. Just think, if someone had the gall to speak to the voters, you know, the ones who actually live there and need real representation from local leaders, just think if somebody said, hey, we should reach out and see what they need, make their lives better and thereby expand our voting base. Someone who'd maybe, you know, speak about affordability, transit, housing. Someone who'd make it their priority to end the nonstop corporate lobbying corruption that's infested Lansing. You see, that is a winning strategy. Ms. Bitely, though, seems to believe that if you slap independent in front of your name, the people will follow. Mike Duggan is part of the elite political class here in Michigan, and he seems fine and dandy allowing and helping Republicans retain or gain more control of our state government. That's his job. There's only one party, though. Everyone, there's only one party that's celebrating the ripping away of hundreds of thousands of Michiganders' Medicaid. There's only one party that's trying to gut public education. There's only one party that's trying to weaken union representation. There's only one party that celebrates masked thugs kidnapping and disappearing undocumented people in Michigan, which is hurting families and also hurting our economy. And by the way, Jocelyn Benson and Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist, you better be out there fighting for those people who are being kidnapped and being disappeared by Trump's thugs. Be out there every day because they are part of the working class and we are supposed to abide by the Constitution of the United States. And there's only one party that's celebrating Dear Leader's insane tariff scheme, which is definitely hurting the state's economy. And there's only one party that's excited at the prospect of destroying our state's higher education system. There's only one party that's dancing around as food stamp programs are drying up while the economy is cratering. There's only one party that's celebrated while their supporters, some of them from Michigan, tried to steal the 2020 election violently. And there's only one party that is doing everything in its power who are trying to cover up their Dear Leader's past friendship with a convicted pedophile. That's the MAGA Republican Party. And that's the one who Mike Duggan is courting for financial support. So is that the mythical middle that you're describing, Ms. Bitely? See, everything I just described there doesn't really sound like it's in the middle. Ms. Bitely, you are describing and fighting for this so-called centrist movement, a movement that has led us down the very path where we are today. And we wonder why so many are so distrustful and so disenchanted with political reporting nowadays.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to our good friend Rick Haglund from Michigan Advance for being on this week. And good work by Steve Kneeling of the Detroit Metro Times for highlighting all of the MAGA right-wing forces who are throwing their support towards Mike Duggan for governor next year. So please don't forget to vote on the Left of Lansing Twitter poll. Would you support Mike Duggan for governor next year? Yes or no? You can also leave me some of your expanded thoughts on the poll question at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And you can also leave me some of your expanded thoughts on what the hell's happening with our Detroit Tigers. Please, please tell me we're not witnessing an epic collapse happening right before our very eyes. Do something, AJ. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.